to the second case this morning, Langenbach v. Walmart Stores.
I didn't see his honor any place. I didn't see the judge any place.
Mr. Castor? Apparently he didn't have the same drawing power as a former Solicitor General.
Jim Castor with my son Lucas Castor for the appellant. May it please the court.
That's a better audience, your son.
We believe summary judgment should be reversed in this case for three reasons. First, in the retaliation context, context matters. That's the first point. The second point is the trial court judge, the magistrate judge, drew inferences in favor of Walmart on summary judgment, not in favor of Ms. Langenbach. And the third reason is the court ignored systematic evidence of men being treated better. Let me start with the first point. But let me start with a quote from the Burlington Northern case at the U.S. Supreme Court. A schedule change may make little difference to many workers, but matters enormously to a young woman with school-aged children. That's what we have in this case. A woman who had tumors removed from her uterus and had continuous bleeding from surgery is placed on the third shift while she's on leave, while she was on leave. The third shift is, beyond dispute in this factual record, the most taxing physical shift. She is entitled under the FMLA regs to be returned to the same shift in the normal course of events. They put her on the third shift. She had already served on the third shift. Other managers had not. They knew. There's some contest about what they knew and when they knew it. But in the appendix at page 26, you can see that as of April of 2010, they knew she had serious medical problems and they knew she would go on FMLA leave. Mr. Dooley's own statements in the April 2010 leave support that. They say that. She then receives, within a week or two of her return from leave, the worst performance review in her entire career as a manager. 2 weeks later, in mid-October, she's placed on a performance improvement plan, October 15th. And then as a result of that, she's fired.
Right, but she had been on a performance improvement plan earlier.
In 2009, yes.
So she was experiencing performance difficulties well before the FMLA leave.
Well, here's what I would say. The court cherry-picks the 2009 and 2010 performance evaluations and says there's a leadership issue back then. She gets the same performance evaluation in 2009, the composite performance evaluation, as did the men who were immediately promoted. She was a solid performer in 2009. April of 2010, the same thing. So, and the way Walmart works, and I assume the way the record works, is they started a PIP in 2009, but then they dropped it, which gives her a clean slate. Shouldn't be used for any purpose because Walmart says it's a clean slate. And for whatever reason, they dropped it. The first performance improvement plan that she ever had to go through at Walmart was after she returned from leave, within a few weeks of her return from leave. So I think that's really the first performance improvement plan that matters. That's not a part of a clean slate. And here's what I would say, Your Honor. The court, the trial court judge, the magistrate judge, took these things independently, looked at these things independently, looked at the performance evaluation, looked at being placed on third shift, looked at the termination, looked at the performance review, all independently. They are not independent events. They're interconnected events. Nobody who went through these things would say they were not interconnected. They were all connected as a part of a chain of events that led to her termination following the leave. Second, drawing inferences in favor of the defendant, Walmart, on summary judgment. The trial court cites to some cases that say timing alone isn't enough. Well, then she completely ignored the timing. Timing can create a presumption of causation. She completely ignores the fact that she's placed on the third shift, the most physically taxing shift, while she's on leave. She ignores that. She ignores the performance evaluation, worst she ever got as a manager, within a week or two of her return. Ignores the PIP and the timing of the PIP. It's not okay to just ignore those facts. She then cherry-picks these old reviews, looking at commentary that supports Walmart's overall view, without considering the fact that her composite score on these performance evaluations in 2009 and 10 is as a solid performer. That's her overall performance, which is the same performance evaluation score the men get who skyrocket up to shift manager. She then says the third shift is part of the job. Well, everybody takes a turn. There were several managers who hadn't taken a turn. It was the worst part of the job, the most physically taxing part of the job. And in the Burlington Northern context, context matters. They knew what was going on with her physically. They knew she suffered from continuous bleeding. And then put her on that shift while she's on leave, where she has to move a lot of freight, and that is undisputed on this record. The magistrate judge then says she was paid less, not because she was a woman, but because she had a lesser job. Well, that was our entire point, that she had a lesser job even though she got the same performance evaluations as the men, but they were promoted more quickly.
But she admitted that she wasn't qualified for any position higher than the one that she had.
You know, interestingly, Your Honor, that was not an argument that Walmart made. The court picked out that testimony, and the testimony doesn't say that. We've quoted the testimony. She says, she's asked, were you qualified for a shift manager or a store manager? She said, not yet, but I would be in the future. This is a classic example of inferences. She's entitled to the inference. An inference that could be drawn from that is, I need to go through a little training and I'll be qualified. That's one inference. To draw the inference that she's saying she's unqualified is exactly contrary to the standard on summary judgment. That's exactly contrary to, the inferences are supposed to be drawn in her favor. And that's, she did not say she was unqualified, Your Honor. I submit that the record shows otherwise.
Well, if the basis for the claim was that she was discriminated against by virtue of not having been promoted, when she says that she wasn't then qualified for the promotion, it seems like there's only one reasonable inference to draw from that, which is that she doesn't meet the qualifications.
She said, first of all, she was an assistant manager at the time. So she was promoted to assistant manager, and we have several claims, one of which is that she's experienced discrimination in her termination from the assistant manager position.
Right, that's a separate claim. I'm focusing on the lack of promotion claim.
I understand, Your Honor. She received the let's turn that around. Let's assume she said in her deposition she was qualified to be president of the company. Would anybody regard that? No. What she said was, not yet, but I would be in the future. What does the future mean? After serving as a shift manager for a couple of weeks? That's an inference that should be drawn in her favor, Your Honor. That's an inference that she is entitled to on summary judgment. The court also said reasonable jury could find that she was qualified, that she was meeting the reasonable expectations of the employer. This is a low threshold under the prima facie case standard. She was receiving, until she went on leave, solid performer evaluations. And during the PIP, comments are made to her by her supervising manager. She's doing well. She's doing fine. She has no problems. A reasonable jury could find that she was meeting the reasonable expectations of the job. To say otherwise is completely contrary to this record. The magistrate judge also holds prior promotions against her, saying she's gotten promotions in the past, so she's not entitled. I don't even understand that argument. That makes no sense at all. The comments that the court cited to and the inference that is drawn from those comments. The court also ignores evidence of systematically better treatment for the men. Similarly situated employees who received the same performance evaluations were, in some cases, handpicked for management. There was a career preferences model since 2006. You were supposed to go through an application process. Chris Might didn't do that, the market manager. He called on former football players of his, and the defendant, Walmart makes this point. He didn't call on them because they were men. He called on them because of his prior relationship. Well, he was a football coach. I think it's a safe assumption that the people he knew from playing football and coaching football were men. I think those things correlate one with the other. Similarly situated employees who receive the same performance evaluations go up to shift manager within 2 years. He hires four of them. And I guess Walmart's explanation, I see that I'm into my rebuttal, and I will reserve the balance of my argument for rebuttal.
Thank you, Counselor. Mr. Eisenman?
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Eric Eisenman, here today on behalf of the Appalee Walmart Stores, Incorporated. I'd like to jump right in by responding to some of the points raised by Mr. Castor. I would agree with his contention in this case that context matters. And the context here is that Ms. Langenbach, from the time that she became an assistant manager at Walmart, had documented performance issues. So that begins in 2008, well before she exercises her rights under the FMLA. Context is important here because Walmart gave Ms. Langenbach every opportunity to succeed. It placed her on two separate performance improvement plans. It issued her a coaching for improvement document before she went on FMLA leave. And it worked with her for a number of months before she was terminated to try to get her to improve her performance. And finally, context is important because on the FMLA claim, Walmart granted Ms. Langenbach every right to which she was entitled under the FMLA. They gave her all the leave that she asked for, and they returned her to the same job that she was working when she returned. That's one of the points that Mr. Castor made. Ms. Langenbach is trying to characterize this as a reassignment to third shift, and I don't think that's an accurate representation of the facts. The job description for the assistant manager position that Ms. Langenbach had specifically said that assistant managers will be required to work third shift. Ms. Langenbach testified in her deposition that she knew that was one of the responsibilities.
But not only third shift.
Not only third shift. That was one of the responsibilities. They would be rotated. And she testified that she had worked third shift in the past, and she also specifically testified that she knew she would have to work third shift again in the future. So there's no concept here that this was a change for her. It was a continuation of that same position. And even if it were deemed to be a shift or schedule change, this circuit has spoken very clearly on that specific issue. Porter versus City of Chicago and Gruby versus Lau Industries both addressed whether a schedule change is an adverse action in the retaliation context, and specifically held that standing alone, it is not. The other issue I wanted to address that Mr. Castor mentioned is the statement that Ms. Langenbach made in her deposition. The question that she was asked was whether at the time of her termination, she believed she was qualified to be a shift or co-manager, which was the position above her, or a store manager, which would be that position two levels above her. She specifically said she would not, but that she could be in the future. That admission is fatal to her failure to promote claim, because one of the elements of that prima facie claim under any test is that she be qualified for that position at the time. Now, there's another problem with that failure to promote claim, and that is she never applied for any position above assistant manager. In fact, she received every promotion that she applied for while she was employed by Walmart. So she can't state a failure to promote claim if not only did she not apply for any of those positions, but she herself admitted that she was not qualified for those positions at the time of her termination. In her brief, Ms. Langenbach spends most of her time on this FMLA retaliation claim. And the district court properly granted summary judgment in Walmart's favor on that claim for two reasons. First, it correctly found that Ms. Langenbach couldn't make a prima facie case because she couldn't demonstrate that she was meeting Walmart's reasonable expectations at the time of her termination. And second, that no reasonable jury could conclude that there was a causal connection between her decision to take FMLA leave in July and August of 2010 and the termination of her employment in March of 2011, 6 months apart. On the expectation element, this court has held that the key test is whether the employee is meeting the employer's expectations at the time of the termination. At the time of her termination, she had been on a performance improvement plan, her second performance improvement plan, for more than 4 months. There are pages and pages of documents that Walmart created and noted that showed that she was not meeting the expectations at the time of that termination. So there's no real argument that she was meeting those expectations when she was terminated. But in her brief, Ms. Langebach suggests that we should expand the scope and take a look at a larger context. If you do that, you will find that over this course of the time that she was an assistant manager for Walmart, she was not meeting those expectations. The same issues that appear in this 2010 performance improvement plan appear in the reviews that she was receiving in 2008 and 2009, in the coaching document that she received in 2010, and in the performance review she received in April of 2010, well before she exercised her rights under the FMLA. As for the causal connection, the only real evidence that Ms. Langebach suggests is appropriate here is that there is a timing connection between the time she exercised her rights under the FMLA and her termination. But that was 6 months apart. And this court has held that even 3 months is enough to defeat an inference of causation in the retaliation context. Now, in her brief, there are some other actions that Ms. Langebach alleges were adverse actions. Okay? She suggests that Walmart's decision to schedule her on this overnight shift, this development needed performance review that she received, or this October 10, 2010 performance improvement plan were adverse. This circuit has consistently held that those specific items are not adverse actions in this context. As I mentioned, there was no reassignment to an overnight shift. It was merely a continuation of that shift that she was responsible for working at the time that she began to be an assistant manager. In Stevens versus Erickson, this court held that the continuation of an employee's position without any changes in the terms and conditions of employment cannot constitute an adverse action. There were no changes to the terms or conditions of her employment. She was receiving the same pay, she was receiving the same benefits, and was entitled to the same rights. This development needed performance review that she receives. If you'll take a look at the performance reviews that she received before she went on FMLA, you'll see that the same issues arise. The same comments are being made about her failure to lead, about her failure to properly supervise associates, and her failure to manage her own time. But notably, that performance review that she received shortly after she returned, the record evidence reflects that it was completed before she went on leave. It was in the books. She had submitted her comments, her managers had submitted their comments before she exercised her FMLA rights. So that defeats any inference that there's any retaliation behind that. Finally, the performance improvement plan that she was placed on when she received. Again, this wasn't the first time she'd been placed on a PIP. She had been placed on a performance improvement plan more than 6 months before she exercised her rights under the FMLA. But to the extent that she contends that's an adverse action, this court has specifically answered that question. In Colby, Illinois, the court held that implementation of a performance improvement plan is not retaliation. That Cole case was an FMLA retaliation case. The concept is, a performance improvement plan is an opportunity for the employee to improve. If, as Ms. Langebach would suggest, the rule was that an employer is not allowed to give an employee a performance improvement plan or to give them a poor review after they returned, it would essentially eliminate the employer's ability to manage an employee after they've exercised his or her rights.
Right. That's clearly untenable. But I think the argument is a little bit different here, which is that the first performance improvement plan should be kind of taken off the table in terms of evaluating whether she was or wasn't meeting expectations and whether the second PIP was pretextual because of something in the nature of a clean slate policy or something like that that Walmart has. Maybe you can explain that.
Sure, and I think that's helpful. There was testimony during the depositions that successful completion of a PIP resulted in a clean slate. The idea being that there is no adverse employment action or there is no adverse consequence that employee suffers from going through one of those processes. So Walmart does not argue that the 2009 PIP is evidence or somehow held against her as to her performance at the time of her termination. Rather, that it's evidence that some of these same issues had occurred earlier, before she exercised her rights, to defeat her argument that this PIP came out of thin air and she had no idea what these issues were. Finally, Ms. Langebach makes some Title VII claims in her complaint as well. And her treatment of these claims in her brief tell you all you need to know about their merit and the weaknesses. First, she's got that failure to promote claim, which we've discussed. She fails to establish that failure to promote claim because, first, she was granted all of the promotions for which she applied. Second, she never applied for any position above the assistant manager position. And third, as I mentioned before, she conceded in her deposition that she was, quote, not qualified for any higher positions at the time of her termination. This circuit has held that an employer cannot be liable for failing to hire a person who does not apply for a job. She didn't apply for anything above the assistant manager level. On her disparate pay claim, Ms. Langebach needs to identify similarly situated male comparators. She cannot show any similarly situated male employees who earned more than she did. The record here shows that she actually made more than the male comparator employees. She was an assistant manager at a non-metro store. The difference in pay between metro stores and non-metro stores is set by the corporate division at Walmart, and that depends on where the store is located. So any assistant manager, male or female, at a metro store will earn more than a non-metro store. The male comparators that she's identified at other non-metro stores were C.J. Tabaski, Latravis Henry, and Troni Shumpert. All three of those individuals earned less than she did during the relevant time frame and received smaller raises during the time period in question. To the extent that she tries to compare her pay to managers at a different level, this also fails. She tries to make the argument that she should be compared to these managers after they had already been promoted. That's not how a Title VII equal pay claim works. You have to take a look at who a true comparator is, and it's not a comparator if someone's at a higher level. And finally, she has this discriminatory discharge claim. This claim fails for the same reason as her FMLA retaliation claim. She cannot establish that she was meeting Walmart's reasonable expectations, and she can't show any causal connection between that termination and her protected status. Ms. Langebach received pay increases and was promoted throughout her career at Walmart, and the company gave her every chance to succeed. As soon as she was promoted to that assistant manager position, the issues began. The record is clear that those same issues continued throughout the duration of her employment, and they are the ones that led to her termination of employment in 2011. There is absolutely no evidence that Ms. Langebach has offered that her gender or her decision to take FMLA leave had anything to do with the company's decision to terminate her employment. Walmart respectfully requests that this court uphold the district court's grant of summary judgment.
Thank you, Mr. Hyde. How much time?
About 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Your Honors, when I was in law school, I worked on a construction crew one summer and made the mistake of telling the foreman that I was in law school one evening. At the end of the day, I carried every heavy wheelbarrow of cement for the rest of the summer. It was part of the job.
It built you up. Look at that.
I don't know if it did or not, but it was part of the job. It was the worst part of the job. And that's what happened here. She's put on third shift, and the FMLA regs specifically call for someone to be returned to the same shift. She's put on third shift. They know in April of 2010 she has these serious medical issues.
I thought it's the same job.
It is the same job, third shift.
I thought the rules, regulations had put back in the same job.
Typically the same shift is what the regs say.
It says typically the same shift?
I don't know if typically is the word, but usually the same shift or words to that effect is what the regs say.
I think the word should be used in exact way.
Well, Your Honor.
The same job is the way I read it. But I mean,
well, the regs talk about same shift. And that shift difference was a significant matter for her. Just as in the Burlington Northern case, when the court says a schedule change for most employees wouldn't matter, for a young mother with young children, it would matter. It does matter. This context matters a lot. She just came back from this serious surgery. She had continuous bleeding, and while she's on leave, she's placed on this. To say that the issue is whether this was an adverse action, I think I can...
Didn't her medical thing say she was 100% or something to that effect?
Walmart had a policy that you had to be 100% to return to work. She was on September 13th, according to her doctor, to return to work on 2010. Now, she did suffer from continuous bleeding, which she talked about. But the issue is, the other men who were managers at the time hadn't yet been on the third shift. People took turns because it was obviously the less desirable shift. And she was placed, and the issue of whether that's an adverse action, you can say it's a deprivation of a job benefit and is an adverse action, but that's a straw man argument. The issue is whether it's evidence of discrimination that can be considered by the finder of fact. Just as the performance evaluation, the worst she ever got 2 weeks after she returned from leave. They say they calibrated it on July 26th and therefore her leave wasn't considered. Well, she had notified them that she was going on leave earlier in July. They knew about the leave when they calibrated the review. They knew about her medical condition and the need to take leave since April of 2010. So the argument that the calibration occurred after the or before the fact of the leave is a misleading argument. As far as the applications, there's an important point to be made about both the FMLA claim and the gender discrimination claim. You proceed under the direct model. The direct model doesn't require that the prima facie case that the plaintiff show that she was meeting the reasonable expectations of the job at the time of her termination. I mean, this is a low threshold, and she was getting, until she returned from review, the same performance evaluations as the men. Comments were being made that she was doing well, doing fine from her supervisor, which the magistrate judge says were admissible comments. But even if you say that somehow the jury could not find, and I think a jury could easily find she was meeting reasonable expectations. But if you say that, you proceed under the direct model, and you look at whether there's protected activity, evidence of causation, and an ultimate adverse action, which is the termination. The only thing she can recover damages for under the FMLA is the termination. What we have here in this case is an incredibly powerful series of events that leads to the plaintiff's termination. This case should not have been decided on summary judgment. These facts should have been presented to a jury. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Tom. With our thanks to both counsel.